Welcome to Army Real Talk, an Army Matters podcast from the Association of the United States Army podcast series. I am Nzinga Curry, Director of AUSA's Education and Programs, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Lieutenant Colonel Brittany Lloyd, AUSA Army Fellow. Listeners, this episode is in tribute to Women's History Month as we recognize successful women and Army leaders who have contributed greatly throughout the years and continue to set examples for future generations.
Yes, ma'am. These women are paving the way and reinforcing every day that with hard work, passion, and commitment, you can accomplish anything. Thank you for joining us.
I am so excited about our guest. Today, we have joining us Lieutenant Colonel Retired Robin Johnson, who is the Chief of Staff with the Women in Military Service for America Memorial. We also have Chief Warrant Officer 5, Yolandria Dixon Carter, who is the Assistant Executive Officer and Senior Warrant Officer Advisor to the Chief of Staff of the Army, as well as Command Sergeant Major Tabitha Gavia, Director of Defense Operations with Merit. Ladies, thank you so much for being here today, and I look forward to you sharing your stories with our listening audience. You know, I want us to reflect on your experiences and accomplishments that have led you to where you are today. So, Sergeant Major, let's start with you. Your last few positions were both prestigious as well as important missions. You had the Central Regional Health Command as well as the Recruiting Command. Would you please share a bit about your career path and how it led to those positions as well as where you are today?
Absolutely. My position at Regional Health Command Central was as a senior enlisted advisor to Major General Rob Temple. What prepared me and what led me down that path was the years of experience in the support hospital, as an operations sergeant major, as a senior enlisted advisor at the AMET Sermon School. So the duty positions that led me on that path, and of course the mentors and seniors and peers, and of course my soldiers and the civilians that I worked with along the way, were all instrumental in the path that I took. So believing in Army medicine, I think that's the very first thing, the pinnacle. Believing in Army medicine gave me the passion and the drive to want to continue to serve as I became more senior. Our military health system has a very interesting history, but at the core of it, it's the commitment, the passion, the drive, the innovation, the creativity that every single member of the Army Medical Department contributes every day. I would say that comes up in the path that led me to working for General Temple in that capacity. Recruiting Command was a little different. Of course, I was a medical, my background, not a professional recruiter. I recruited long time ago, back in 96, 99, if I remember my history, a long time ago. But the jobs that I had, you know, between leaving Recruiting Command as a young E7 and returning as a senior sergeant major, the leadership challenges that I experienced and the organizations I was able to lead along with officers and non-commissioned officers I served with prepared me to become the Command Sergeant Major of Recruiting Command. And I serve alongside of General Frank Muth. I was actually selected by General Snow as one of his last acts before he turned the reins over to General Muth. But it's essentially overcoming and embracing the leadership challenges that we have as soldiers, as members of the military, and more importantly, as leaders. So I would say that taking those hard jobs, sometimes you do have a choice, particularly in the medical field. So my background is radiology specialist. So I could have said, no, I'm pretty happy with being a radiology specialist, but I also wanted to be a first sergeant. I wanted to work in operations. I wanted to work in training development. So taking those hard jobs essentially prepared me for incredibly hard, the two jobs I had, they were incredibly challenging, but I love them both. And again, the leadership challenges along the way prepared me for those jobs.
Well, I love the diversity in your career, and it is exceptionally impressive. So thank you for your continued service. And so I would like to hear a little bit more about some of the challenges as you experience being a woman or being a female in the Army, both personally and professionally. Could you share a little bit about that?
Personally, my friends and the people that have grown to love me along the way know me very well, know my personal challenges and balancing the challenging duties that you have as a soldier and your family life. So it is, it's incredibly hard being away from family. I've never lived in the same state with my mother since joining the Army. So just being apart from family is incredibly challenging. And the way that I essentially work my way through is the friendship, and probably the most important thing is mentoring. The mentors that have been with me along the way have helped me to find that balance. And my family. My family has been incredibly supportive. So although they haven't been, you know, with me physically, they have been with me both emotionally and a bit spiritually. I like to think of myself as a spiritual person, and that helped me achieve balance. But it's incredibly difficult. As a senior female, you have a role that many other women in society, it's alien to them. So I've literally been in charge of something since, you know, I was a young E4, and many women that I meet, you know, in my other pursuits, whether it's volunteer work or with just any other thing that I do in the community, it's just different, you know. And so I've definitely had experienced some challenges with people seeing me in this traditionally male role. So that kind of bleeds over to the professional side too. And so professionally, it can be incredibly difficult. When I was a young person, just getting people to listen to me. My first job, I was a Pershing electronic repairer, and everyone in my squad was a male. And then whenever I was in charge of something, it seemed like that I had to try extra hard to win their trust and confidence. But I will say that once I did, we could do anything. So being a woman, sometimes what you have to say is discounted, or sometimes you're humored. But I think that what actually wins the day, so to speak, is your leadership and your willingness to compromise, your willingness to collaborate, and your willingness to take acceptable risks to further the mission. And by doing that, you are demonstrating to both your male, female peers, and to your seniors, and to your subordinates, that you are the person that should be in charge of whatever is going on at that moment. But I will stress that it has been incredibly challenging, and at the same time, rewarding.
Thank you for sharing that.
Sarah Major, yes, thank you so much. And also as a senior leader who's a woman, I can definitely relate. And as you mentioned, so are other guests as well. I appreciate your comment on the camaraderie and family and friendship that you build along the way. That's generally kind of the grounding support that gets most of us through. Next, I'd like to turn to Chief Warrant Officer 5, Dixon Carter. Ma'am, thank you for joining us. Chief is a woman who entered the Army in the late 80s. You've witnessed a lot of changes over the years that have unlocked more opportunities for women. We are seeing more and more women serving at the highest levels of the Army, which is encouraging, and even serving in combat MOSs. Can you share your experience on how the Army has allowed you to progress over the years in conjunction with all of the transition that we've seen and allowed you to excel at the highest level of the Warrant Officer Corps?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with such distinguished women and hosts of this panel. So thank you so much for that opportunity. I tell you, as with Sergeant Major and what she was saying, you know, we've all experienced some challenges being a woman in the military, both personally and professionally. I wasn't always in positions where my potential or my talents were recognized. Although I was told, you have a great future, or I would really be good at this job or that job, what I was lacking was access and opportunity. So early on in my career, most of my positions were what I like to call walk-ons. You see, I wasn't the first in the batch of nominees, or my name wasn't on the original slate for what we would like to call high visibility positions, if you will. But somehow, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, at the right location, if you will. For whatever reason, I don't question it. As a walk-on, what I did is I walked in the interviews, I presented what I felt was the best version of me, the version that they would get that day and every day after that if I were selected and hired for that position. I definitely believe that we are in a better place, a much better place today. As a matter of fact, I see it every day. And so I know that we're in a much better place today as women serving in our military, because women now don't just have access. They have access and they have opportunity. We're in positions of authority. We're in positions where we can serve in combat MOSs and combat branches because we're in the first batch of nominees. Our names are on the original slates, and there are people that are offering names of women to compete for prestigious jobs And the position in which I'm serving in as the Senior Warrant Officer Advisor to the Chief of Staff, there were 39 extremely talented and gifted warrant officers of my peers, predominantly men, that nominated me for the position. So that in itself speaks volumes. And most of them were combat arms. So again, we have definitely come much further than where we were when I joined back in the late 80s. I believe that our leaders are continuing to seek and improve. And we know that to improve, it's going to require changes. And successful change requires each of us to do our part. So I do not take it for granted that the Army has given me opportunity to be a better Yolandria, which ultimately led to a better Chief Warrant Officer Dixon Carter.
Chief, thank you. And I think you hit it on the head. Change is important for growth, and I agree with you. I see it every day. I've seen it in my tenure. I'm creeping up just past 18 years in service as well, and I can see a marked difference from when I first joined as well, and it's encouraging, it's exciting, and I see great things not only for the Army, but the future of women in the Army. That being said, you mentioned working for the Chief Staff of the Army. I'm sure that that is incredibly exciting and rewarding. And his People First strategy is really making great changes and initiatives in the Army. And from your perspective and kind of what you've seen while working with him, how do you feel that this strategy supports gender and ethnic equality in the ranks?
Man, that's an excellent question. Allow me to first say I thoroughly enjoy working for the Chief of Staff of the Army. It has been most rewarding for me, both personally and professionally. So I'm grateful for that opportunity to be able to work alongside him. General McConville's message, People First, it's not just a message. It is truly an action, and it's one in which he demonstrates every day. I always say it's important for you to message a philosophy or a strategy, but it's more important for you to act on it. So his audio and his video is in alignment. They match every single day. I would also like to offer that the People First strategy, it's not just the Chief of Staff of the Army strategy, it's the Army strategy. And it's a strategy in which all people are supported. And by people, we've heard it before. When we say people in our United States Army, we're talking our soldiers from the active Army to our Army National Guard, Army Reserves, our families and civilians, our soldiers for life, retirees, and our veterans. I truly believe that the Army is committed to equality of opportunity for all people, and is doing more of this in the realm of diversity and inclusion that will provide all of our men, all of our women, regardless of their gender, regardless of ethnicity, religion, or creed, with a rewarding professional career.
Chief, I couldn't agree more. And I see it and I feel it, and it's exciting. And I agree with him 110% that when you take care of people, everything else falls into place. Thank you again.
Absolutely, ma'am. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Chief, I appreciate your service, but also your passion that you continue to deliver in your positive messaging. So thank you. Colonel Johnson, so I'm excited because, as you know, this is not your first Army Matters podcast. We have had an opportunity to connect and collaborate in the past, featuring Soldier for Life, where you were the director. So I would love for you to share with our audience a little bit about your career and experience as a female officer, commander, and working for the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Once a soldier, always a soldier, soldier for life. I just retired 8 months ago, and you said this was real talk, so I'm going to do real talk. You know, I joined at 17 in the Ohio National Guard, and I thought, I'm just going to pay for college, serve my country for a little bit, and then that's it. Well, fast forward 26 years later, end up going on active duty and staying for the long haul. That's been a great journey. It's hard to believe it's been 8 months since retirement, but as I look back over those 26 years of everything that's happened, I'm just really excited to have now landed in a new role at the Military Women's Memorial as the Chief of Staff there. But yeah, lots of memorable experiences. Did enjoy serving with General Dempsey as his special assistant, commanding in the 101st, right before my time at Soldier for Life. All of those wonderful, but I can't say that any one of those in particular was like my favorite. Each of them shaped me to who I am today. And honestly, I think the toughest job I've ever had is being a mom of my two kids. So that's really the most challenging and juggling it all. So yeah, thanks for having me back. I'm so excited to be on a call with these two amazing women. Oh my goodness, you guys are incredible.
Absolutely. And I can co-sign with the mother part, but we won't even get into that. But as you stated, you know, you have just transitioned from the Army, so congratulations. And also that you are the Chief of Staff for the Military Women's Memorial. You know, I would love to hear more about the memorial, some of their initiatives, campaigns, and things of that nature. Just tell us, how has that been working with the memorial?
You know, a lot of people don't even know there is a memorial. We're located right at the entrance of Arlington National Cemetery, but we're a nonprofit, completely separate from Arlington. It's just a beautiful place. And when you look at it, it just takes your breath away. And then inside is this 33,000 square foot education center that really tells the stories of the 3 million women who have served, which is quite impressive. Like, I think about it, I pinch myself that I got to go to work every day because I'm going to go ahead and tell my age. I don't, you know, 1976, I was born. And in 1976, that was the first year that women could even be in the military academies. And 1970, I was two. That was when the WAC was disbanded. So when I was born, I couldn't even join the Army as it is known today, right? I would have had to have joined the Women's Army Corps. In my lifetime, it's gone from just barely being able to go to the academy if I wanted or to be fully integrated in the Army to now women serving in all roles and to be in the infantry and go to Rangers. It's so cool. So I'm excited to tell those stories and the legacy of all those women who really paved the way. And so it's a great job to be able to say that you get to do that every day. And it's called work.
Absolutely. I understand. And I love the progression. So could you tell us a little bit about the campaign? I think it's titled Her Service.
We do have a Her Story campaign. It's kind of a play on words, you know, history, her story. And we believe that history is not complete without the stories of all the women who served. And so we're asking every woman that served or their family member, if they're no longer with us, to register their service. It has been and always will be free. And we have this database and we collect all of these stories of these women. And we just think that that's the right thing to do, right? Like, we need to make sure history is complete and their voices, their stories are important. And so you can go to womensmemorial.org and it takes no time at all and register your service.
Sergeant Major, I want to go back a little bit and discuss further some of the things that you mentioned about having a mentor and the importance of that, as well as embracing some of the leadership challenges that I believe that you have conquered and which is essentially needed for the next generation. So if you don't mind, you know, what would your message be to those who follow you? What would you share with them?
What a great question, and thank you so much for the opportunity to answer that. So I believe you need several types of mentors. You need a senior mentor, someone that's been there, done that, and has been successful along the way. They've had successes, they failed, you know, then you select that person to follow and to learn from. You also need a peer mentor. You need someone that's in the thick of it with you, someone that you can commiserate with, someone that understands the challenges that you face and they're there with you. Maybe not physically, but they're definitely experiencing some of the same things you are, and you can learn from each other. What I told my soldiers in the past, when you select your peer mentor, is choose someone that is a little bit better at this Army thing than you are, and maybe a little, just a little senior, but definitely as your peer. The third one is the one that gets overlooked all the time. You need a junior mentor. You need a junior person that's going to tell you how it is, the impact that you are having on the organization and on them and on their peers and how they see you. And that's probably the hardest peer to find because you don't want to have that person labeled as, you know, they're sucking up or use that language, but if they're brown nosy. But it's important that you have a junior person that you have frank conversations with about the organization, about even your core, whether it's the officer core and if your core is one officer core. I think that's vitally important. And as you do that, you embrace the leadership challenges that you face along the way. And don't be afraid to fail. And don't be afraid to take risks. Because we learn from when we fail. And we learn when we take mitigated risks sometimes that will benefit our organization. And as you navigate this wonderful life in the Army, you need to prepare for it to come to an end. So I've been in the Army for over 33 years. I'm currently on transition leave, and my message is that you take advantage of everything the Army and the Department of Defense offers you. Soldier for Life has amazing programs for you to tap into. The DoD Skill Bridge, you need to prepare yourself to truly be a soldier for life. So you take care of yourself and your family along the way from the first moment that you step into basic training to the moment when you are looking at your DD-214 and the wonderful and challenging life that you've had. You have to prepare yourself for that and just be the best person. Live your best life. We've got this one chance at life. Just live your best life and be happy. Be as happy as you can. And, you know, if there are meters, we talk too much. So that's all I have to say. But thank you so much for having me today.
That was really good information. Very wise, wise words to kind of ponder on and incorporate as folks see fit. So thank you. I like that junior mentor piece. I might have to work on that. So thank you very, very much. And so now, Chief, I want to ask a question based on some of the things that you spoke about. You spoke about how women now, within recent years, have access and opportunities, and how women in the Army have come a long way. And, you know, obviously there's still work to do, but I would love for you to share a few lessons learned that you could share with our listening audience so they can use those as little nuggets as they go throughout their career.
Thank you again. You want me to fall a sergeant major? So unfair. So inspirational and encouraging and empowering. Thank you, Sergeant Major. So I will tell you, for me, I believe first and foremost, we as women have to stop doubting our self-worth and our value and believing that we don't belong, because we do belong. And so we have to understand that we are just as trained, equipped, self-disciplined, and ready to do the you name the job as our counterparts are. So we have to stop self-doubting ourselves. For me, I try to be everything except for me. And in trying to be everything else that everybody else wanted me to be, I lost my self-identity. And when I decided that I can't be all of these different people or these different things, so let me go back to finding and rediscovering who I am, embrace who I am, and be the best version of who I can be. And that's me. And so lesson learned was to just stop trying to be something other than who I was created to be, and that's me. We are women, and we may be the first, or maybe we're the 30th. For me, being the first in the senior warrant officer position, first female, lesson learned for me looking back on some of the first females is not to focus on being the first female, but to be focused on making sure that we're not the last female in those positions. And lastly, I look at the fact that earlier on in my career as an enlisted soldier and even as a warrant officer, there were very few people who took time with me. What do I mean by that? I mean time to talk, invest, mentor, and engage. Be that encouragement, be that empowerment, and hold me accountable for things that I have done good and those things that I have done bad. So earlier on, I took the opportunity to make sure that I was everything that I wanted people to be for me, that perhaps they were not there for me. And the biggest thing was truly recognizing my self-worth, recognizing that I can be the best version of me, and to give people time.
Powerful, powerful message. Thank you, Chief. I appreciate you sharing that. Definitely nuggets there. So I want to kind of end on a humorous or a funny note and go to Robin, Lieutenant Colonel Johnson. So I am aware, and I would love for you to share a little bit with our audience, that you are a comedian. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I think I came out of my mom's womb making jokes, but I've always used comedy and humor, kind of a personal wellness strategy of my own. I love watching stand-up comedy and Saturday Night Live, just kind of always was drawn to it. But that didn't really match up with my Army career aspirations, right? Sometimes that's not a good fit. Sometimes that's kind of frowned upon to be funny or witty. And so I suppressed it for a long time. And as I was getting ready to transition, someone said, if you could have any superpower, what would it be? And I thought about it and I said, well, I'd want to heal people. Now, I don't want to go to medical school. I don't even like blood. Like, I mean, I'll handle it, but that's not my thing. I don't want to do anything medical. But then I thought, I want to make people laugh. And I really think there's this real practical and therapeutic benefit to the use of humor. So as you can see, my Puerto Rican side comes out. I speak really quickly. So comedy takes a lot of good timing. And so I thought, well, how do I hone my skill? And I found this organization called the Armed Services Arts Partnership, and they were offering free comedy boot camp. I took that. And ever since, I've been performing as Robin Phoenix, doing virtual and live shows here in the DC area, and just really working on my craft. And now it's become a passion of mine. And I hope one day to take it a little further, that it's not just me taking like a yoga class as a hobby, but to go even further and to really help find ways that we can leverage comedy and humor to maybe help people who have high stress or who are coping with a lot of pain or some sort of mental health issue. So yeah, thanks for asking me that. It's always fun to share the fun side of my life.
Absolutely. And I love how you were able to embrace both of your loves, the military as well as being a comedian. So that is excellent.
Thank you. I hope to see you at the show soon. I'm going to send you an invite.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Ladies, thank you again for joining us, Lieutenant Colonel Johnson, CW5 Dixon Carter, and Command Sergeant Jagavia, for joining us today and sharing with our listeners the amazing efforts of women and leaders across the Army. We really appreciate all of your insights and thoughts. Have a wonderful day.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.